Welcome everyone to the Eurythmian Chronicles. Chapter 13, A Bowl Worth Dying For. Rami pushed his brother's chairs into the grounds of the grand mansion of his wife's murderers and put his best smile on. Beneath his pants, strapped to his thighs, were twin daggers he could grab in less than a second. Beneath his perfectly tailored and fitted jacket, he had two guns in case he needed to make a scene. The mansion they had entered lay on the outskirts of the floating city, not so far from where they used to live as kids. The mansion was a five-story building that took the shape of circles, forming five rings on top of each other. Rami looked upward at the tall building that loomed on them like the shadow of death, the shadow of those who had ripped him away from not only his wife, but his unborn daughter too. Rami shook his head, causing his hair to bounce around his perfect ponytail, one that Remy took a solid hour trying to fix. Today, they needed to be seen as two friendly brothers who would help anyone who needed them, and they were submitting their will to the new governor. Rami would have never agreed to this idea if Remy hadn't convinced him of how they would help them to get revenge at his wife's murderers. Plus, today, it was announced that the governor had something to show everyone, something that Remy thought was important for their cause and their plans. However, Rami thought it was better if they had sat this one out to sit back at home and have a carefully calculated plan for how to get the newbies here safely, and have them formally introduced to him and his brother, and to understand the burden they have to carry. But no, Remy thought it better that the governor knew them and liked them, so when their acclaimed distant cousins came to visit, there would be nothing suspicious. Remy was reading a book as Rami kept pushing his chair through the garden of the mansion, and Rami was revolted by the idea that he liked the garden. In the night, the Yulin flower had its white petals reflecting the Bivida in its mirror-like petals, casting the garden in the hue of blue that the inner child in Remy wanted to jump and lie there in the Yulin garden and just enjoy the sky and stars. Well, the stars were invisible, sadly, due to the partly cloud state of the sky and the lights coming from the mansion, but still. When they were nearing the door, Remy closed the door, and Rami glimpsed the title of the book, Clarity of the Shadows, written by the hands of the lost researcher, year 1156, Karzan Time. Who the hell are these researchers, Remy? Rami asked, and Remy tucked the small volume in the inner pocket of his blue suit. He turned and looked at Rami, his eyes twinkling with delight. I will tell you later, but not here. He turned even more to fully face Rami. And took Rami's hand in his. He squeezed tightly. Rami, as your king and you my guardian, I free you from your duties. Go home if you wish. As your brother, I ask you to go home and do not enter here. Please. But Rami only smiled and kissed his brother's head. Thanks, Rami. But never in a lifetime will you be the one taking care of me, smirked. You will have to cook for me if you want me to leave today. Remy smiled and turned back. Fine, oh great unbeatable warrior. Let's venture into the enemy's den and see what they hold for us. And secretly, even though he knew how selfish he was, Rami knew that Remy was happy his brother didn't leave his side. Remy surveyed the suffocating room around him, his napkin on his mouth as he coughed, and beneath him, the ground shook, as if the world didn't approve of the party. Remy grumbled, agreeing with what Arothaman thought. The ball was held on the top floor, and thankfully, they had an elevator installed in this building. Remy and Rami made it to the elevator with one of the politicians who hated the old rulers of Arothaman, and the owner of the Starwish pub. The man was tall with white hair and a black beard. His suit was black, which meant he was the closest to the governor, because the governor made sure that he included the dress code in this letter. Red was to be for the servants, white for the common people who invited the ball, like the owner of the pub. Blue was to be for the angel and his companion, hence Remy and Rami. And finally, black would be for those close to the governor, and by extension, hated the old rulers. The owner of the pub looked at Remy and Rami and noticed an acknowledgement, and Remy nodded back, and they didn't spare a look at the politician. It was a thing between people like them to not acknowledge those who were ruining the world, stripping it from its beauty, and they sought power and control. Remy thought of his idealistic view of how a roadman should be, and he knew he needed to be realistic, but he couldn't. This was the world of magic, where anything is possible. The Gates had a king of imagination itself. Long dead as he may be, they had him. And now the new rulers were here. If they only knew. Through the ride, the politician, Remy later remembered his name was Paul and Nimerick, looked up and down the owner of the pub. And then his eyes fell on Remy, suited and smirked. So, it's you.
It's me, Remy replied, and added one of his innocent smiles, knowing that Paulin wasn't stupid to fall for it.
Paulin turned and fully faced Remy, ignoring the owner of the looming presence of Remy completely as he leaned in, sizing up Remy as he sniffed him and smirked.
What are you playing at, boy?
This close, Remy could see the wrinkles on Paulin's face, despite his well-built body and seemingly young age. His teeth were blinding white and he smelled of expensive cologne. Remy blinked, then frowned.
Probably something for your face. It looks very old from this angle.
And despite Remy's careful world to see how this man ticked, Paulin smiled, then laughed.
I knew you'd be funny. That's the spirit we need the likes of you to bring in our community. How many people out there like you, boy?
The likes of you, Remy thought. A clown and a cripple.
Damn right you are, the owner of the Starwish pub said, his eyes sparkling with delight.
Remy winced internally, for the owner clearly had no idea that Paulin was making fun of Remy and his position. But Remy smiled and turned, ignoring Paulin and the simmering anger he can feel radiating from him in waves, and smiled at the owner.
Thank you. I'm Remizel, but everyone calls me Remy.
The owner offered his hand, grinning as he said,
Caleb, at your service.
Remy took his hand and shook it, noticing for the first time how young Caleb looked, despite his calloused hands.
Remy looked up at the owner and instantly knew he wasn't from Grandana.
He was definitely from Sharmer or Kauma, both being in the Southern Continent, where the kings of shadows and darkness used to rule. Caleb looked like he had only passed his 10th immortality cycle. His eyes were big and light green, with hair as yellow as gold. His skin, like the inhabitants there, had a pale-colored skin that had almost started tanning. Remy had studied the geography of the place there, and he couldn't find a scientific reason to why the place there had its people's skin pale. The weather was perfect, and snow rarely fell, so what's the reason? He didn't visit the land there yet, so he didn't know. But the imagination created did create wonders, so why not this? Now, sitting amidst the ocean of suits, soiree dresses, gleaming makeup, and feral smiles, Remy thought of who here might be with his and his brother's cause. Remy looked around and saw politicians and influential people staring at him, probably had heard of his work. Remy had done it to get their attention, yes, but it wasn't fully for this purpose. It was because these people needed him. The people he helped were in a dire need of a tentative hand, a soft touch, to have the feeling that someone is watching over them in their carnivorous world. Remy had been one of those people before. He and his brother would go for days without food or shelter, left to the elements to die. Not all people are foolish enough to make a deal with a creature that can bend time to their will. That was a Remy and Rami exclusive. Remy looked at the crowd and found his brother with another boy, probably their age. From how Rami was whispering in the boy's ear, Remy could tell that his brother was flirting with the boy. And it was working. Good. If it went as planned, Remy's suspicions of the surprise the governor had for them would be confirmed or denied. Remy looked at the boy, smiled, and took Remy's hand in his, taking him to a dark passage beyond the doors of the ballroom. Behind Remy, however, someone grabbed his chair. He whirled, then smiled. A woman stood there, her gloved hands gripping the handle of the chair as she smiled.
Mind if I join you, Angel?
Remy nodded and turned back, looking at the bull. She wore a red dress that fitted her body perfectly. She was slim and her skin was brown and gleaming in the light cascaded from the huge chandeliers above them. Her onyx hair was left to fall behind her like a curtain. The dress only reached her knees, and her red heels had the leather strapped high up, hiding under the dress. Remy turned as if to talk to her,
but he looked at the strap and he knew he was right. This strap wasn't built for elegance, but functionality. He looked up at her and smirked, then turned back into his seat. She leaned in on him and said, "Tell me, Angel, how do you want to die today?" Remy nodded internally, noting every detail in the bowl yet again, and he noticed that people with black suits or dresses were slowly forming circles around him, probably to hide the crime that was about to be committed. And they probably knew that Remy would have Remy flirt with the boy, and that had used the boy as a bait to take Remy away from Remy. Remy nodded again. Good. She hated him because she knew he was the angel, not the fact that he was one of the rulers of the men. If she knew, she wouldn't have even waited to ask him. If she wanted to be with the ones wearing black, she would have killed Remy in an instant. Remy had to admit that he was slightly worried at his current situation. Not because he was ready to die, he could incinerate this woman on the spot, make her warp around herself and get old and wither with one thought. He was worried that if he did that, he would be exposed for who he is. He needed to think of a tactical way to get out of this. This woman was red and wanted to be black. How can he? The woman leaned in closer than she has been already. A knife pressed at Remy's neck. She whispered in his ears, "Play along." What? Remy might have miscalculated what this woman wanted. So, he decided to see what she really wanted. He closed his eyes and pushed part of his power onto her. He slipped into her mind and said, "What are you playing at?" He wished he could slip into Rami's mind and call for him, but he needed the intel the guy would give him. Any piece of information would be helpful to their cause, and this woman couldn't kill him. If she tried, she would find that she had stabbed herself instead. "I know you might not know who I am," the woman said inside Rami's mind, clearly unfazed by the rare gift Remy had. "But I know who you are, Remy, and I know these people want you dead. Your brother is being warned right now. Play along with me, and you will live." "Who are you?"
"Time, slip away from my grip. Time, make me not reach my end," the woman recited. "Time, forget me not, slay forgotten. Time, forget me not, as old as I have gotten," Remy continued for her. This was one of the oldest Arudaminian's poems, where they still fold old language and redundant literature, but this specific poem, "Time Passings" by Yuman Kilele, one of the most renowned historians of all time, said to be present during the First War and have been a faithful companion to "For a World Better Than This, Remy." The woman was about to plunge the knife in his neck, and she projected images of only pricking his neck, telling him line to mind that the knife tip had some type of a drug that would put him to sleep. Remy took one last look at the bowl around him, marking every face for later inspection before the world went dark.
Then suddenly, light again, and he was still at the bowl. The world erupted into a symphony of gasps at the woman he decided to call her nameless, angled his chair to look at what everyone was looking at. And Remy felt true horror, true fear, as he saw the woman descending the stairs across the room. These stairs weren't there before. It must have been some sort of a trapdoor, then, built in the wall, and when the light was turned off, the opening mechanism was triggered. The woman wore a beige dress that sparkled as she stepped into the light. Her light brown skin matched the dress perfectly. Her hair passed her shoulders by mere inches, its curls bouncing as she walked into the ballroom and looked directly at Remy, raising the flute she was drinking from. Her green eyes were ethereal, and if Remy didn't know who she was, what she was, he might have said she was beautiful. Remy felt the woman behind him handing his chair to someone else, and he hated how he felt so helpless at this specific moment. Remy exploded into Remy's mind. "Remy, that's her. That's by the gate, she's the one, Remy.
The one who had murdered his wife, Iris."
"Remy, calm yourself," Remy said. "For me, please." Remy could hear the handle of his chair groaning as Remy said, "She killed Iris. She killed my daughter. She took everything from me, and she doesn't even know it." Remy sighed and tugged on the bond between them. Not the brotherly bond, but the king and guardian one. Rami was forced to as Remy commanded, and Remy hated his very existence for using that bond. But what else could he do? If this plan failed, if Rami fell again into despair he was in, the creator himself that helped them all. Nameless boomed in Remy's mind. Remy, you cannot stay here. She can sense you. She senses us. We need to get out of here and reassess. Remy couldn't answer the woman in... And the woman in beige looked at him and smiled.
Dear all, she said,
and despite her small frame and beautiful face, she had a way of carrying herself. She raised her chin and said again, in her soft voice, one that had everyone looking at her in awe and amazement.
I have gathered you here to thank you for the amazing work you have done for the great land of Grandana. We thank the Red for running our stores and seeing to our people's need. We thank the White for opening their stores. People in Red cheered, oblivious to how the Blacks looked at them in a mix of disgust and pity. But the people in White noticed.
We would like to thank the Blacks for leading us into a brighter future.
The Blacks smiled and mumbled.
The woman raised her glass and looked at Remy, smiling with the cunning of a serpent.
And to the ones in blue, for helping those who needed them the most.
And for a moment, for a fraction of a second, Remy wished he was still the drooling stupid being he was before Deus gave him his power. He wished that he would be unaware of her gaze or how she licked her lips. Everyone turned to look at Remy and he smiled. He had to control his nerves for the creator's sake.
Why, it's my honor to be called out by you, dear governor, Remy smiled, raising a fist as if in union. We are all here. We are all one. We help those we can.
The governor nodded and smiled to the crowd.
And now, for the surprise you have been waiting for. She snapped her fingers and the light went off again, but this time, spotlights were centered on the dance floor, and no one was there. And for the first time, Remy noticed how there was so small space between the room and the dance floor. It started rising, and Remy felt the world shaking again. But as the platform rose up, and the outline of the cage started appearing, Remy knew that it wasn't the world, but whatever was trapped inside it. When it fully came to view, Remy saw with horror the creature trapped inside of it. It was a wolf. A jet black wolf with amber yellow eyes and the darkest pupils. It hit the bars of the cage with its massive body. Remy thought it would break its jail and destroy them all. The cage didn't much as bend. Behind him, he heard Nameless gasp. A very strained gasp, as if she wanted to cry.
Rag, the kings and queens had failed us.
They had fought the Siren and it became hard for them. They left our world. Took their magic. They were so afraid it would be stolen. They didn't even care to leave their magic for us to use against the evil, but they sent them to another world. The governor paced in front of the cage, as if showing the caged animal she had the freedom it longed to have as she spoke again. And now, we found this creature prowling about, sneaking into our mansion like a thief. And so, we have captured it, and it had confessed. It had confessed what he is and what he is doing here. The governor turned and smiled at the creature as she said, "Please welcome Regulus Illyrian, guardian of the Queen of Earth." The wolf turned and looked at Nameless, meeting her gaze.
Remy could have sworn that his eyes softened as if he knew her.
Remy turned and looked her up and down, his eyes slightly widened.
"You can't possibly be."
"Hello, King," Nameless said in his mind. Even her thoughts were filled with remorse for Regulus.
"I am Rosalina Karamian, guardian of the Queen of Wind."